Very special guest this week is Todd Rosenblum of Adaptive Architecture based in Rockland County, New York. Good afternoon, Todd.
Good afternoon.
How's it going today?
Great.
Fantastic. Todd, would you give us an overview of your company and tell us what Adaptive Architecture is all about?
Adaptive Architecture is a company that specializes in design for the disabled community, accessible environments for the disabled, and the company is approximately 15 years old. It started in Albany, New York, 15 years ago, and 7 years ago, I opened up a Rockland County office as well.
Tell us about some of the things that you do for clients, and just sort of take us through the steps in a typical residential project that you work on.
There are five phases to designing any house, and the first phase is the design phase. The second phase is what's called design development, when you do further detailed design on the project. The third phase is called the construction document phase, and that's really produces blueprints. That's what everybody calls them, blueprints. That helps you build the project and get a building permit. The fourth phase is bidding the project out to different builders in the local community. And the last phase is construction administration, where the architect watches the project being built and make sure that the project is being built in accordance with his drawings.
Why do people need to work with someone like you as opposed to their regular architect who they know, who lives around the corner, or who their brother-in-law used? Why is it important to work with a specialist?
Well, I have 15 years designing these accessible houses, and it started with one project, and it kept snowballing. Once people found out that we did this one project, they kept calling about this particular service. So we have that experience. Your typical architect definitely is aware of accessibility issues, but may not deal with them to the degree that I do on a daily basis.
All right, so once you put together a plan for the client, you said?
Correct.
All right, so once you put together the plan for the client needs to select a builder. And most people, at least in my experience, don't know builders who are used to working in this area. Will you help select the builder?
Yes. I mean, I do projects all over the tri-state area. So in different areas, I have worked with builders. And if I'm working with someone in an area that I'm not familiar with the builders, I interview the builders. I'll call the local building officials or the local building department and ask them for recommendations. I interview the builders. I go out and see their work firsthand. I call references. I call other local architects to see if they're happy with this particular builder. And by doing this process, I assist my homeowner in making the right choice.
And if the homeowner wants to work with their own builder, somebody who you've never worked with before, is that okay too?
That's not a problem. Again, I probably would use the same similar process. I would ask that builder to show me their past projects, ask them their experience, if any, in building something that is wheelchair accessible. And you can also, of course, call the local building officials and ask them their opinion of this builder.
This is Bernie Crooks, and we're right here on AM 1230, and we're going to be taking your questions this week. So if you have a question for our very special guest, Todd Rosenblum, please call 693-5700. That's 693-5700, and we'll forward your question on to Todd. Todd, let's just continue with some of the services you provide. After you and the client have settled on a builder, what follow-up services are provided on your end?
Well, again, I would have spent time at this point developing a very detailed set of drawings, and accessible houses have some very unique details to them, and most likely the builder has never built anything exactly like this before. So it's very important for me to follow through and watch what the builder is doing when building an accessible house, because again, there will be different types of construction that he might not be used to doing in a residential situation. So I follow it all the way through, depending on what my client wants me to do. But a lot of times I'll come out every 2 to 3 weeks and observe the construction. Obviously, if the builder has questions or if the homeowner has any questions, I can come out and look at what's going on in the project. Some homeowners want me to handle all the billing. So when the builder sends them a bill, they'll send it to me, and I'll go out to the project site and make sure that what the builder is billing for has actually been completed.
Now, I've heard some horror stories where people hire architects, and believe me, I've got nothing against architects, but they draw up these fancy plans, they submit them to the building department, they get approved, they hand over the plans to the builder, and then you can't find the architect during the process. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, as in any profession, there are good architects, there are bad architects. As you know, Bernie, there are good lawyers and bad lawyers. And, you know, my clients have my cell phone number, and they know where I live. So I'm not that difficult to get a hold of, and I pride myself on giving top-notch service to my clients.
So it's not just about doing the plans. It's about making sure the plans get implemented and the builder does what he or she's supposed to do.
Right. Architecture is a service. I mean, the plans that you provide are a product, but the profession of architecture is a professional service, and part of that service is dealing with your client from A to Z, from the time that you help them pick out the piece of property all the way through till the builder hands them the key to the house.
Now, without getting into specifics and dollar amounts, how do you generally bill for your services? Is it a fixed fee? Does it depend on how many hours you work? How do clients expect to pay for these very fine services?
I have different arrangements. Some clients want to pay me hourly on a smaller job where it's hard to quantify actually what I'm going to be doing. Typically, on a residential project, there will be a fixed fee, and the way I come up with that fixed fee is I look at a percentage of the construction cost, of the initial construction budget, and I also do look at how much time I actually think I'm going to spend on the project.
And in cases where we have natural disasters like this, does it make it more difficult to estimate the total cost? I assume the price of lumber is going to be affected by what's going on in the Gulf Coast. How do you deal with those situations?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because I just finished bidding a job in New Jersey, and what happened was the builder, after he'd already submitted his bid, now that it's time to sign a contract with the homeowner, put in a section of the contract saying that if lumber prices go beyond a certain point, that the homeowner is going to have to be responsible for that. And he's talking about fuel surcharges because of the fuel prices, and he's worried about lumber prices, sheetrock prices, and concrete prices, because those things are drastically affected in times of shortage like we're going to be having in a few months. I mean, right now there isn't really a shortage because they're not doing any construction down there, but in let's say 6 months from now when they start the reconstruction process, I think there will be a shortage, and as we all know, there's another hurricane on the way, and we don't know what that's going to do.
That's for sure. This is Bernie Crooks, and you know I'm a partner in the White Plains-based law firm Littman Crooks, and our very special guest tonight is Todd Rosenblum of Adaptive Architecture, and this is the weekly radio show on WFAS AM 1230. Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney, and we want you to call in with questions. We're here to talk to Todd. The phone number is 693-5700, and right now we're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. This is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney, right here on FAS AM 1230. Our special guest is Todd Rosenblum of Adaptive Architecture, and we've been talking about designing plans and implementing those plans. Todd, I was just wondering, what things do you take into consideration when you're designing a home or you're working on modifications or an addition? What goes through your mind and what has to be taken into account?
Are we talking about an accessible house?
Well, yeah, for somebody who would have a family member with special needs and would require your services.
When taking that into consideration, what I usually do is I ask a lot of questions is what I do. I sit down with the family and I play a game of 1,001 questions. I have a list of standard questions that I ask, and I have to gather a lot of information before I can actually start the design process. And I have, through my experience, figured out what questions to ask, and sometimes you have to draw the information out. Some of the questions you have to ask are kind of a personal nature. You're going to be designing kitchens and bathrooms, and if someone who's disabled, you sometimes have to ask sensitive questions. You have to be careful how you ask them, but you need that information to design the house properly.
Give me an example. Give our listeners an example of some of the types of situations you've been involved in that required your services. You mentioned the kitchen. What could be different about a kitchen for somebody with special needs as opposed to somebody who doesn't have special needs?
Well, if you're talking about a wheelchair user, for example, a typical kitchen counter would be at 36 inches high, and a wheelchair user might want it at 32 inches high. And you would be concerned if, for example, a sink, someone in a wheelchair would need to be able to roll under the sink to be able to use the sink, and the typical house sink does not have that situation. You also have to pick out kitchen appliances that have controls that are within reach of someone in a wheelchair. Just think about a refrigerator. If you had a refrigerator that was top and bottom, it might be very difficult for someone in a wheelchair to reach the freezer up above, so you'd more likely go with a side-by-side refrigerator. When you have a cooktop, you want to make sure that someone in a wheelchair is not reaching their arm over the flame, so you want to have the controls either on the side or in the front. So there's a lot of things that you can do in a kitchen to make it much more usable and much more safe for someone with special needs.
Wow, there's so much to think about. Any differences between designing a house for a child with special needs as opposed to an adult?
Oh, most definitely. I'd probably say about 75% of the accessible houses I do are for children and young adults. And there is a greater unknown when you're doing something like that. If you're designing a house for a young child, you don't know necessarily what their potential is. So you don't want the architecture ever to limit them, and you have to keep that in mind. Something that may work for them now might not work for them in the future, whereas if you're designing for an adult, you usually know what the situation is physically, and you probably have a pretty good idea of where of what the prognosis is, so it's a little bit more clear-cut in what you should be designing. So with children and young adults, usually they have the potential to make more progress, and you never want to limit them in any way by what you design.
That must be a true challenge if you're dealing with a young child. Who knows what the upside potential could be, and here you are stuck with the task of designing the house, and you want it to be adaptable.
Yeah, and the other issue is when you have a young child is you have the parents to deal with, and not only am I designing the house for the child, but I'm really designing the house for the caregivers, because you don't want the caregivers or the parents to get injured, and there's many ways that they can get injured. If they're carrying this child around and the child is getting heavier with age, they can hurt their back, and now all of a sudden they can't do their job properly. So when you're dealing with a young child, it's not only designing the house for them, but making sure that the caregivers can properly take care of them in that environment.
Is it ever necessary for you to seek the help of outside professionals, like, for example, in the healthcare field, to help you do your job?
Oh, I do this all the time. I definitely talk to my clients, their physical therapists. I talk to their physicians. I talk to their teachers. I mean, if I have a question and I need an answer to it, I'll seek out the proper person.
Now, is there any difference? We've been basically talking about modifying an existing house. What if somebody wanted to buy a piece of land and build a house from scratch? Do you get involved in site evaluation?
Yeah, I'm currently doing that with a client in Connecticut, and what we did there was he was working with a local realtor, and they came up with a list of three or four properties. So we spent an entire day. We went out there, and we evaluated the properties. And when I evaluate a property, I'm looking at it, obviously, as an architect, but I'm also looking at it as an architect who specializes in accessible environments for the disabled, you know, which means the property might be slightly different. If you have something that's on top of a hill and you're going to have a wheelchair-accessible van or someone in a wheelchair, that may not be the best property for that person.
This is Bernie Crooks, and we're talking with Todd Rosenblum, and we welcome your questions. Just call us at 693-5700. And Todd, let's just get back to some topic we haven't actually spent a lot of time on yet. Commercial property. We've basically been talking about residential. Does commercial property present any different challenges? How do you deal with so many of the complex regulations, such like the Americans with Disabilities Act? Tell us about that.
Well, you know, as any architect has to be familiar with the American with Disability Act, the ADA, and all new buildings today have to comply. And all existing buildings that are a public accommodation should also comply with this. And when the law first came out, my company was doing accessibility surveys, going around to existing buildings and telling building owners and business owners what they needed to do to their building to make it comply. So it's very complicated, especially when you're dealing with existing buildings. It can get very technical, and some architects are more familiar with it than others.
What's an ADA compliance survey? I've heard that term.
Basically, and I haven't really been doing a lot of them lately because the law has been out long enough now, although I do get calls for it occasionally. Sometimes there's a building that just got built and unfortunately it didn't comply. But really, I was doing most of them several years back because there were so many existing buildings around that didn't comply. And basically, my clients wanted me to come in and look at every aspect of the building, the bathrooms, the entrances, the elevators, the stairs, anything like that, and tell them, did it comply with this new law?
I mean, do you do a feasibility study?
Well, a feasibility study might be the next step. You know, once you've done this survey and you've told the client what all the problems with the building are, the next step might be a feasibility study as to how you can fix these things.
Have you ever had to say no to a client because it wasn't feasible?
Well, you know, architects are supposed to use their imagination and come up with a creative solution for something. I mean, clients do ask me to do things that I don't think comply with the building code, they don't comply with the ADA, or they don't comply with local zoning ordinances, and then I have to tell them, you know, that I don't think they're going to be able to accomplish what they won't want to, or I'll give them an alternative way to make it happen.
And if they're not in agreement with you, at that point they either find somebody who will do it, or we move on?
Yeah, it's like any other professional. You know, people get second opinions all the time.
Okay. I mean, you have such a wide range of services, and frankly, you're the only person I've ever met that really provides this service. What did you do before you did adaptive architecture?
Well, you know, since I got out of school, you have to work for a licensed architect for a certain period of time before you can actually take your license exam. So that period of time, I was exposed to a broad variety of architectural projects. And still today, I do mostly residential work, but I do a lot of commercial interiors as well. So I am starting to really focus in on that segment of my practice.
Now, you mentioned licensing. I mean, is this industry regulated?
Oh, yes. Just like an attorney or a doctor, you have to be licensed with the state, and you have to have a certain educational background, and you have to go through an apprenticeship process, and you have to take a licensing exam.
This is Bernie Crooks, and we're talking with Todd Rosenblum of Adaptive Architecture. I'm your host of the weekly radio show on WFAS AM 1230, Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. And we'll be right back to answer your questions. Just give us a call at 693-5700. Welcome back. This is Bernie Crooks. We're speaking with our very special guest, Todd Rosenblum, and we're talking about Adaptive Architecture. And one of the things that I had a concern about was the funding for these projects. How do families come up with the money to pay for these big houses and the adaptive architecture that's required?
Well, a lot of them are privately funded. The people pay for it themselves. But a very large percentage of my clients have possibly been injured in some way, and they have some kind of settlement. And in the situation that it's a child, there's usually some kind of special needs trust that's been set up, and therefore that's how the project is funded.
Who usually sets up the special needs trust?
A trust attorney.
Okay, so the trust attorney specializes in this area, sets up the special needs trust, and then the funds to build the house come out of the trust?
Correct, and there is usually a process involved of gaining access to these funds to protect the child.
Do they need to go to court sometimes?
That's typically the situation, that they have to go in front of a judge and explain, you know, why they're building this house and the special circumstances. Usually the judge is familiar with the situation, but he may not have seen a request like this before.
And are there limitations on what you can do if there's court involvement or supervision?
There are limitations as to what I can do. I mean, people at that point usually have hired me to do something that we talked about earlier, which is a feasibility study. I will write a report based on the family's needs and come up with how big the house is going to be in my estimation, how much it might cost. And this is the first step. And the trust attorney may use this report in going to the judge and asking for the funds.
Have you ever had to testify where you go into court and explain why it's so important for you to do what you do?
Oh, yes. I've had to go to court several times.
And are there typically people who object to what you're doing?
They're not objecting to what I'm doing. I mean, they may you know, sometimes a client may be asking to spend more money than the trust has, or a greater percentage of money than they should be spending, and then somebody may be objecting. But typically, these people have these trust funds to assist them. They got this award to make their life easier, and one way of doing that is to have a house that works with them. So nobody's really objecting outright that this person shouldn't be having a house or an addition to a house or making their house wheelchair accessible. Nobody really says no to that. It's just if you have X amount of dollars, they want to make sure that you have the right amount of money throughout that person's life.
And let's say you design this beautiful house, and then the people decide they want to move. And then a family wants to move in who doesn't have a family member with special needs. Is this typically a hindrance? Does the house have to be basically started from scratch, or is this a good selling point?
I think it's a good selling point. There's other people out there who may want the house exactly the way it is. There's a lot of people who today would want a house with no steps at the front door, no steps from the garage into the house. Maybe a senior citizen, a couple would want a house like that. It would be very easy for them. It would be a very, very safe house for them to have a bathroom with grab bars and no step over into the shower. So there is a market for that type of housing. But I do design the houses with future resale in mind so that they're not going to be so unique that an able-bodied family would not want to live there.
Now, you mentioned no steps in the front walkway. I find that interesting. How is that a benefit to somebody with special needs not to have steps in the walkway?
Well, if somebody is using a wheelchair, obviously steps is a hindrance to them. And, you know, if I'm designing a house from scratch, I would rather design it with no ramp up to the front door and just have a door that you can just go right in. I usually will design a porch to protect the door so that the rain and snow won't get into the door. But it's obviously the easiest way for someone in a wheelchair to get into the house. And most garages today have steps from the garage into the house, and I've come up with a way to not have any steps into the garage as well.
You know, I'm looking at some of your brochures, and of course, you all out there on the radio can't see them, but I'm sure if you contacted us, Todd would be happy to send them to you. And I see that in a lot of the houses, there's sort of like an overhang on the front door. What's that for?
Well, you know, in the Northeast and in other places, if you're going to be so bold as not to have a step at the front door or steps, you know, and you have 6 inches of snow on the ground, or if it's raining, you want to have something to protect that area in front of the door.
So in case the client is fumbling for the keys to try and get in the front door, at least they're protected?
Exactly, and if you have a front porch, even, you know, in the snow, you probably aren't going to have, you're going to either have minimal amount of snow there or no snow at all.
I can imagine that this must be a very stressful experience. Tell us about some of the stressful situations you've seen clients go through during this process.
Stressful for me or for my clients?
Okay. For who?
For my clients. You know, that's my job, so it's not really... sometimes obviously it can get stressful in any profession.
What's the biggest issue? I mean, what do people usually get, you know, stumped on?
Well, anybody building a house or anybody who has built a house or has put an addition on their house knows that it just can be stressful. You're bombarded with a lot of decisions in a short period of time. It's most likely the first time you've ever done something like that. It may be the first time you've ever spent this amount of money. So it can be very nerve-wracking for someone. And if you have a special needs family, they already have so much going on in their lives that this can be the little extra that pushes them over the edge. So that's really the main reason I think that people hire me, is because, I mean, that's part of my job, is to reduce the stress to a minimum. And I tell people that. I said, I'm here to help you make all these decisions. And that way I can reduce your time expenditure and your stress.
Now, one of the things I would imagine these types of houses have are wide hallways.
Correct.
And I guess that allows allows the person to get in and out of doors and to go from point A to point B?
Right. I mean, your typical older style house will have, for example, 3-foot wide hallways. The houses that I design typically have 5-foot hallways. That way a wheelchair user could really turn around at any point, and it also makes it infinitely easier to get into a door when you're making a right or a left turn.
Okay, we're talking to Todd Rosenblum. This is Bernie Crooks, your host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney, and we'll be right back after this message. This is Bernie Crooks of Littman Crooks. Our very special guest on Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney is Todd Rosenblum of Adaptive Architecture. We've spent the better part of the last half hour talking about designing houses for people with special needs. Do you also do houses for people who don't have special needs?
Yes, although I consider all my clients special, and I think my special needs background has enabled me to ask great questions of those clients as well to find out what they're looking for. I also design a lot of custom houses as well.
And you still have to take the time to talk to the client and find out what their needs and desires are?
I think just because of my background, I take more time than a typical architect.
Now, I understand that you've received an award from the Brain Association for some of your work. Tell us about that.
Well, they heard about what I was doing, and they asked me several years ago to give a lecture at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. So I came in and talked to some doctors and lawyers, and that's what I did for them.
And was it in relation to any particular project you had worked on?
I showed them a slideshow of about 10 houses that I designed, and I took them through step by step and educated them about what I do.
Now, is some of your work out of state?
Yeah, I do a lot of work in Connecticut and New Jersey and all over New York.
Any different challenges in different states, different regulations, things you got to worry about?
I mean, it used to be that all the states had different building codes. Now there's a model code, and although each state still has slightly different regulations, that's made it a little bit easier to go from state to state, actually.
Does sometimes the family ask you to act as a psychologist? Let's say a family has three children, and one of them has special needs, and the other two kids want to know why you're spending so much time designing it for the particular child?
Oh, I think I always play psychologist for my clients because, you know, the special situation.
Sometimes the parents too, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Mostly the parents.
It's quite a unique field, and we certainly do appreciate you taking the time to come speak with us and educate our listeners. I think it would be great if you could give the listeners of FAS your contact information and your website, so if they have additional questions or require more information, they can check you out on the Internet.
Great. My website is www.adaparch.com, which is ADAPARCH.com.
And phone number?
It is 845-364-0337.
That's fantastic. This is Bernie Crooks, your host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday night at 7 p.m. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Have a great evening.
Thank you.